Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Knowledgeable.
Listen, here's what's wrong with your hypothesis, your theorem, your supposition, your postulate.
Honest.
If that front ain't in gangsta, your back end won't be able to show its full potential.
Understanding.
You're going to suck. You're going to suck for the next couple of years.
Passionate.
I'm all over social media. I live it.
This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hashtag facts.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
Winding the shot clock down. KCP in the corner for three. That might just do it.
And he has owned the paint.
The Wizards hands Minnesota just its second loss in the last nine games.
What Montrezl Harrell and Daniel Gafford combined to do last night, wow. I'll get to that in a moment. Sheehan, I see what you're doing. You don't come out with a Terps highlight because they lost, and you want to protect your boy Turgeon. Oh, boy. We'll get to that. I promise you. The Wizards won. Maryland lost. Virginia Tech won, though, for you Hokie fans. Oh, yeah, the last two kind of go together. Good morning, everybody. Two guests on the show today. Sam Fortier from the Washington Post will join us at 8 a.m. Paul Charchian. We'll talk fantasy football with us at 8:30 this morning. It's December 2nd, and your Washington football team has six games left. How many of those can they win? How many of those will they need to win? This tweet from Victor made me aware of something, didn't make me aware of something, reminded me of something that I had not thought about. Victor tweeted me at Kevin Sheehan DC, Kevin, are you going to be the playoff scenario guy this year or not? He didn't write scenario and express it in any sort of tone, but I think I know the tone that he wanted to express it in. Kevin, are you going to be the playoff scenario guy this year or not? Seems to me that we could get in with an 8-9 record, which means a 3-3 finish doesn't seem to be that hard. Also, has any team ever made the playoffs 2 years in a row with a losing record? Thanks for the tweet, Victor. Again, at Kevin Sheehan DC, if you want to follow me on Twitter. Yes, I will work very hard to update continuously on this show the various playoff scenarios involving the Washington football team. By the way, also, let me remind everybody, these may be the final six games, hopefully more, but could be the final six games without a name that will be the real name to replace the long-held Washington Redskins name. Next year at this time, we will be referring to them as something else. The Commanders, the Belters, the Rubies, the Senators, the Sentinels, whatever they end up coming up with. So I was thinking about this, Brendan, because that possibility of making the postseason 2 years in a row with a losing record, I can answer that question very easily without even looking it up. And I did go to look it up because I wanted to see the entirety of the list of teams that have made the postseason with a losing record. But of course it has not ever happened 2 years in a row. It's barely ever happened. The list of teams that have made the playoffs with a losing record, if you exclude the 1982 strike-shortened season, which was a nine-game season, in which multiple teams, the Browns in the AFC, the Lions in the NFC, made the postseason with 4-5 records, throw those out. That was a nine-game season. And, by the way, they allowed eight teams per conference. It was a revised format for the playoff for the postseason that year because of the strike-shortened season. Washington, of course, as we all remember, won the Super Bowl that year, won their first Super Bowl that year. They went 8-1 in that nine-game season and then had to win three playoff games at home as the one seed to advance to the Super Bowl, where they beat Miami in Super Bowl 17, 27-17. By the way, their first win in that postseason was against a playoff team with a losing record. The Detroit Lions were 4-5 in that postseason. But take out 1982. It's only happened three times that a team with a losing record has made the postseason. The 2010 Seattle Seahawks, if you recall the Marshawn Lynch run against the Saints, they went 7-9 and they won their first playoff game in Seattle against the Saints with that incredible beast mode run. 2014, your Carolina Panthers went 7-8-1, won the division as well. Seattle won the division, the NFC West in 2010. Carolina won the NFC South in 2014, and they also won their first playoff game, Ron Rivera's bunch did, against the Arizona Cardinals as a 7-8-1 team. And then last year, of course, the Washington football team went 7-9 and won the NFC East. Three times it's happened. So two of the three examples of losing record playoff teams are Rivera-coached teams. We knew that last year when they made it as a 7-9 team, and you know, we were reminded many times, Ron Rivera's already done this once, and now he owns two of the three losing record playoff seasons. What if he does it for a third time? I mean, they would have to, at that point, start describing teams that make it to the playoffs in the future with a losing record as teams that pulled a Rivera, because he would be synonymous with that if they were to pull it off this year. Now, can they pull it off this year with a losing record? Just keep in mind that the chances now of making it to the playoffs with a losing record are increased. They're higher than they used to be, not because of the 17th game. That doesn't impact the probability of a losing record team making the playoffs any more than an 18th game would. What increases the probability of a team making the postseason with a losing record is the added seventh playoff team, which we had last year. Now, Washington didn't make it as a wild card team with a losing record. They won a division with a losing record. But because of that seventh playoff team in each conference, it may start to happen more often. It's still not going to happen a lot, but it will happen, you know, more often than it has over the last, you know, well, we've had three examples in a 10-year period from 2010 to 2020, or an 11-year period. Now, with respect to this particular football team and its chances of making the postseason at 8-9, all right, so a second straight losing season, but a playoff season. And the 8-9 this year, let me just say, the 8-9, it's not going to win the division. Dallas already has seven wins. Do you really think they're not going to win any more, or they're only going to win one more? I guess it's possible with the way they're playing. They play the Saints tonight. This is a huge game. Then they play Washington here a week from Sunday. Then they're in the Meadowlands. Then they play Washington and Dallas. And then they've got to play the Cardinals, and they finish at Philly. But I would guess that Dallas has two more wins in them over their final six games. And so winning the division at 8-9, long shot. I think most of you would admit that, even though you're hopeful that Dallas, you know, somehow loses out or only wins one more game, and then Washington, you know, maybe 1-2 against Dallas and they win the tiebreaker, or maybe they only win one, but they've got a better division record. But more likely than not, 8-9 isn't going to do it in the division this year. It's amazing, by the way, Brendan, that we're even talking about that as even a remote possibility, considering Dallas's start. You know, that the division is actually back in play now, because it really seemed to be over for the most part just a few weeks ago. But anyway, I digress. Let me get back to the 8-9 possibility as a wild card. It's possible, but after getting Victor's tweet, I looked into it in great depth last night as the playoff scenario guy. It's not likely. It's not likely that 8-9 will snag a 7 seed in the NFC playoff picture. It's possible. I mean, I'm not saying it's a massive long shot. I would put the odds at like 1-3. I think there's like a 33% chance that an 8-9 team makes it. And the reason is this. You know, the number 6 seed right now is San Francisco. They're 6-5, so they have a winning record. And then you have Washington, who's currently the 7 seed at 5-6. But there are 4 teams in total that are at 5-6 right now. You know, essentially for one spot, if you assume that the 6th spot will be a winning record team, like the 49ers, or maybe it'll be the Rams, and the 49ers will move in front of the Rams and snag the 5 seed. Let me just, for all of you that aren't following along, there are 7 teams in each conference, the NFC and the AFC, that will make the playoffs. The 4 division winners, and then 3 wild card teams. And it'll be the 3 next best records in the entire conference that snag those 3 wild card spots. And then they seed them 1-7, with the 4 division winners being seeded 1-4. So you can, and they didn't change this when they added the 7th playoff team, you can have a better record as a 5-6 or even a 7 seed than a division winner and end up playing on the road. They have not fixed that yet. I think they should, but they haven't done that yet. If you win a division, you're going to play a home playoff game like Washington did last year against a much better team and a better record team in Tampa Bay. But that's how it works. 4 division winners, 3 wild cards, 1-7, and only the 1 seed gets the bye. Only the 1 seed gets the bye. Last year it was Green Bay, who had the best record in the NFC, and they didn't have to play on opening weekend, wild card weekend, where you now have 3 games in each conference, 6 total. So we're really talking about the 6-7 seed. And maybe we should be talking about more than that, because the Rams right now are the 5 seed, and they're playing horribly right now. As we know, I mean, the Rams are 7-4. Who knows? Maybe they won't end up with a winning record. But because it's so bunched up on the back end, with New Orleans, Minnesota, Atlanta, and Washington all being 5-6 teams, if you assume that the 6th seed goes to a team with a winning record, then you have to assume that none of those 4 teams is able to go 4-2 down the stretch to get to 9 wins. That's why it's a bit of a long shot. More likely than not, one of those 4 teams, and maybe it's Washington, will go 4-2 down the stretch, snag that 9th win, and get into the postseason with a 9-8 record as the 7th seed. By the way, I'm not even counting the teams that have the same number of wins as Washington, New Orleans, Atlanta, and Minnesota, but have one more loss like Philadelphia and Carolina. It's still possible. Those 2 teams only have 5 games left, but if one of those 2 teams went 4-1 down the stretch, they would get to a 9th win. Not as likely, but I think if you take the 4 teams at 5-6, there's a better chance than not, and I would put it at least, you know, a 66% chance one of those teams goes 4-2 down the stretch. One of them does. Now, which of those 4 teams is more likely to go 4-2? Well, I mean, in looking at the way the teams are playing and then looking at the schedules that each of the teams face, Washington's got as good a chance as any of those 4, 5, and 6 teams at going 4-2 down the stretch and finishing 9-8. They do. I think Minnesota's a better team, but Atlanta and New Orleans aren't necessarily better teams. Now, New Orleans is going to have Taysom Hill at quarterback tonight. It'll be interesting to see what they look like with Taysom Hill, Brendan, more than Trevor Siemian. I don't know if the Saints have anything left. They've lost 4 games in a row, and the last one, Thanksgiving night, was an absolute one-sided beatdown. But if you look at the 4, 5, and 6 teams and you say one of those is going to make the postseason, and you exclude the 5-7 teams, which, by the way, may be a mistake in Philadelphia and Carolina. And who knows about the Giants and the Bears sitting there with 4 wins and just 7 losses. But anyway, focusing on the 5-6 teams, Minnesota's schedule is pretty rough. They still have the Rams and the Packers and the Bears twice, a team that they've always had a difficult time with. And, you know, the Bears have played better in recent weeks. They nearly beat the Steelers on that Monday night game. They should have beaten the Ravens when Lamar Jackson didn't play, and then they beat the Lions on Thanksgiving Day. I'm not saying they're a good team. They're a pretty good defensive team and actually looked better offensively with Andy Dalton, although I thought Justin Fields had played his best game against the Steelers. So my guess right now, subject to change, is 8-9 ain't going to do it. You got to get to 9 wins. You got to go 4-2 down the stretch. And again, looking at the teams that will be vying for that 7th seed in the NFC, Washington's chances of going 4-2 down the stretch with the way they're playing right now don't seem like they are any less than any of the other teams, and probably they've got a greater shot of doing it than, say, Atlanta and New Orleans. It could come down to essentially Washington and Minnesota for that last spot, and who can get to 9 wins of those two teams. Philadelphia missed out on the big opportunity last week to get to 6-6. They would have been in that 7 seed right now, losing to the Giants, with the Jets on deck and still another game with the Giants and maybe a season ender against the Cowboys that could be big for both or could have been big for just one team. The Eagles are the ones that really had been playing well and hurt themselves badly with that loss in the Meadowlands on Sunday when Jalen Reagor didn't drop one ball that was a touchdown. He dropped 2 in the last 30 seconds that were touchdowns, or the last one was at least to about the half-yard line, which would have given Philadelphia a chance for the win. It's interesting. There was a story written over the weekend of just about how incredible this NFL season has been with the upsets and the unpredictability, and I do want to touch on that a little bit this morning at some point. But there you go. How many wins do they have left in them? We will get to that, and we'll circle back to this a little bit later on in the show and let you weigh in. Sunday's big. Sunday's big because there will be a completely, you know, there won't be a feeling of resignation by any stretch if they don't beat the Raiders Sunday in Vegas. But 5-7 at that point, depending on what happens around them, and that may be part of the discussion on Monday, is, yeah, they lost, but so did everybody else. You know, that's a possibility too. You know, there's been many of those years, right, where it's like, okay, they lost that game, had a chance to win it. It's disappointing that they didn't, but look, they didn't lose any ground because the Falcons lost to the Buccaneers and the who are some of the 49ers went to Seattle and somehow lost. Who knows? But those kinds of things can happen as well. But I think Sunday's big for them. I think this is a winnable game on the road with the way they've been playing against a defensive team that has struggled. Now, we'll see defensively from Washington's perspective if it's as improved as we think it is over the last 3 weeks. Look, you can't deny the win over Brady. 2 interceptions in that game, and they did a really good job. Their offense has also played a significant role in improving their defense because they've kept the defense off the field. But the defense has gotten off the field too. You know, that's happened here for 3 weeks in a row on third down. But the last 2 weeks, if we're being completely honest with each other, not exactly juggernaut teams offensively. Seattle was a train wreck offensively on Monday night. Carolina was starting Cam Newton in his first game back, and to be honest with you, I thought he played well that day, but he played horribly last Sunday. The Raiders are much more capable offensively. They can really move the football. They can really create big play opportunities. And for all the talk about the improved defense, if they can go to Vegas and have a solid defensive day, you know, hold that team maybe not to under 300 yards, which would be 5 straight opponents, but to under 350 and sub 500 on third downs. And the offense continues to move the football and they can finish drives. They're going to have a chance to win this game and be at 500. And at that point, then we won't even be talking about 8-9 anymore because we'll look at the final 5 and say they may have a chance to get to 10. I think Sunday's huge. Some would say, well, it's not a division game. It's not a conference game. No, it's a game that's big for them. To continue this momentum against an opponent that may, for all we know, after the big win on Thanksgiving Day, could be a little bit of a letdown opportunity for them. You know, that was a big win for the Raiders, a draining win. Now they've got the long sort of mini bye off the Thanksgiving, you know, late afternoon game. The Raiders are in a playoff race. You go to Vegas and you beat a team that's also playing for their playoff lives, a team that you're an underdog to. You've been an underdog in almost all these games. Well, you have been. In all three of the wins, you've been an underdog. And you pull that off. I think we are having a conversation on Monday, not just about a team that looks like a playoff team and maybe even a division contender, but looks like a team that could pose trouble when the playoffs begin. One week at a time in the NFL. All right, let's get to some basketball when we come back. I promise we will get back to the playoff situation, the significance of the game on Sunday, and just how many wins do you think they'll need to get in? Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also on the Odyssey app. All right, guys, BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, welcomes you with the lock of the year. Simply place a $10 moneyline wager on either Dallas or New Orleans tonight, and if either team scores a touchdown, you'll win $200 in free bets, regardless of your bet's outcome. Use my bonus code, KevinS200, when you make your first bet. Enjoy football like never before with BetMGM's live betting options and boosted odds specials at your fingertips all season long. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com. Use my bonus code, KevinS200, to win $200 in free bets if either Dallas or New Orleans scores a touchdown. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. D.C. and Virginia only. Remember, if you're a Maryland resident and you find yourself in D.C. or Virginia, you can download the BetMGM app and place a wager if you're in those locations. It'll recognize you as such. New customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem. 1-800-522-4700.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
4:10 seconds to go. That's Russell. The three, Scott, no. Couture bats it around, 2 seconds to go. The outlet to Mutz, and the Hokies take down the Maryland Terrapins, coming from behind, 62-58.
Fire him now! You got to get rid of him. Sheehan, are you going to finally admit it? Are you going to finally admit that your boy is just completely out of his league? Maryland lost last night in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, 62-58 to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech picked to finish, I think, fourth or fifth in the ACC this year. Pretty good team. They had lost two games, close games to ninth-ranked Memphis and 25th-ranked Xavier coming into the game. And Maryland had a 7-point lead in the second half and blew that lead and lost 62-58. Maryland's now 5-3. They've lost to George Mason, Louisville, and Virginia Tech. And it doesn't get much easier. They play Northwestern on Sunday in their Big Ten opener. Northwestern is off to a surprising 5-2 start with a decent win over Georgia, who last night nearly pulled off an upset of Memphis. I didn't know how that game ended. I saw that it was tied last night. Anyway, so the net of it is, you know, you can look at it and say, well, Virginia Tech went 9 of 20 from behind the arc, and Maryland went 1 of 13, and there's your story. And yeah, that's a big part of the story. You know, Maryland had a 7-point lead. They had a chance at 59-58. Somehow this guy Mutz for Virginia Tech lost the ball driving to the rim. The ball went up in the air. It got knocked up into the air by a Maryland player and went into the basket. They took a 3-point lead. Maryland ran a play that got Hakeem Hart a wide open three, and he missed it. I didn't like that possession at all, even though it was a good set and a good opportunity for a guy that's actually knocked down a bunch of threes for them so far this year. I would have gone for the quick two, easy in hindsight. Was talking about it before there were 17 seconds left, and then play the foul game and see if you can get a possession, because Maryland was 1-for-12 going into that. So to rely on a three at that point to tie with 17 seconds left seemed like a bit of a long shot. Would have been better to get a two, etc. Look, if you watch the game last night and you're a Maryland guy, this is for you. I know a lot of you don't care. Last night, I thought Virginia Tech executed beautifully on offense. And Maryland did not, period. You know, Maryland was 1 of 13 and they were 9 of 20. Part of that was because Virginia Tech executed really well offensively. They had great sets to get shooters wide open shots at a key portion of the game as well. Maryland's lead was 7 with about 10.5 to go at 43-36. And that's when Virginia Tech really started to execute offensively. Part of that was Maryland's defense, but much more of it was Virginia Tech's coach and staff designed great stuff to get their best shooters open looks, and Maryland could not do the same thing on the other end. The 1 of 13 is a bad number, but none of the 12 missed threes were like wide open threes where feet set behind the arc, off of a good set or off of good penetration. They were all, most of them were contested. You know, they missed a bunch of threes in another game. Maybe it was the Mason game. I forget which game, where they had a lot of open shots. Last night, they didn't get much on offense at all that was easy. First of all, Eric Ayala, supposedly their best offensive player, he had 2 points on 1 of 9 shooting. They stayed in front of him. They hedged off on him. They helped off on him. And Maryland didn't have anybody else that stepped up. Eric Ayala is used to playing with guys like Aaron Wiggins last year. And the year before that, Sticks, Wiggins, and Cowan. And so it made it a lot easier. Now he's much more the focus of the opponent's defense. And that leads me to this. Maryland doesn't have much offensive talent. That's on Turge. They're not that good offensively, in part because they don't have real good offensive players right now. They don't have guys, a lot of guys, if any, that can truly create their own offense. Fats Russell is a dynamic player in transition. You got to get stops and you got to get rebounds to be able to run. Maryland rebounded better last night after being completely dominated on the glass by Louisville in the Bahamas on Saturday morning. They rebounded better, but they didn't really turn Virginia Tech over with their defense. Maryland turned it over 15 times in the game. Tech turned it over, I think it was just 7. So to get Fats Russell into the kind of game where he's going to be a major factor, because he's not nearly the factor that I thought he was going to be early on in the half court, You know, Cowan, I think, was better in transition, but Cowan was also a very good half-court player and was a real good scoring point guard, and also because of that, created opportunities for everybody else. Fats Russell's not a very good shooter at this point. Haven't seen any indication that he's going to be a good shooter, so you don't have to get up on him, which makes it harder for him to go by people. And last night, I didn't think Maryland ran good stuff offensively. Now, I think a coach will tell you, you know, it's easier to run good stuff offensively when you've got good offensive players. And that's true. And right now, Maryland's only option offensively is through the post with Kudus Wahab, the transfer from Georgetown, who had 18 points last night on 7 of 8 from the floor, and by the way, is a very good free throw shooter. Here's the problem with that. Is he got in foul trouble last night, ended up playing 25 minutes, should have played 35 minutes in the game. And because he was in foul trouble, he was on the bench. He's also a bit of a liability defensively, especially with the way that Turge wants to play defense. And maybe they have to think about more zone when he's in the game. He is a liability defensively. He's also a player that last night Virginia Tech decided not to double. And without a double team, he was very effective. Other teams have doubled him, and he has not proven to me anyway that he's a good enough passer as a big guy to run exclusively your offense inside out through the post. I like a lot of what he is. I think he's got really good touch. I think he's got a couple of good moves. I think he's got decent feet, decent hands. He's a very good free throw shooter with a really good stroke for a big guy. If he gets doubled, I don't know that he's a good enough passer. And if he's not doubled, then he's going to have to be a better defender and stay out of foul trouble so he's on the floor more. They didn't play well last night. They didn't coach it well last night. Virginia Tech played well last night and coached it well last night. That's what you'll get from me on last night's game. Virginia Tech really executed in the half court offensively, and Maryland did not. And when they did, it was really primarily through Wahab in the post. I don't have a problem with that. I'd keep, in a game like last night, I'd keep feeding them. It's the best look you're going to get because Ayala couldn't create, Fats couldn't create, Hart couldn't create. Dante Scott's got to stop dribbling the air out of the ball, and by the way, has to take more shots also. He's passing on open threes early in the shot clock. I don't know if they'll get a better look. Russell's going to have to be a better shooter for this team, or they're going to be limited offensively. Because if you don't have to guard him out on the perimeter and you can wait, then it's going to be hard for him to break down a defense, which makes it easier for everybody else. Their best hope right now is to play excellent defense, rebound, and get some stuff that's a lot easier than the stuff they got last night. They had to work for everything, and it wasn't pretty. Lastly, the kid Martinez, the transfer from Utah, is not a point guard. He's not a backup point guard. And I think Turgeon knows that. I don't know that he's got other options, which is why we've seen him in that spot. But you can't pull Ayala and Fats out of the game or have him in the game where he's a ball handler. He's not good enough to be a point guard. He's not a good enough passer. He's definitely not a good enough ball handler. What does he do well? Well, I can see what the coaching staff, I think, likes in him. He's athletic. He's rangy defensively. And we have seen him knock down a couple of threes. So maybe he can shoot it. He's got to play off the ball. One more thing, too. Julian Reese, their freshman from Baltimore, I think has a chance to be a really good player. I do. He's got to put on some weight. He's got to get stronger because at the rim, he's just having a difficult time finishing consistently. Brendan, there was that big possession at the end where he had an easy layup off of a crazy shot and a bad shot by Ayala, but no one was near him. He had the offensive rebound. He didn't even catch rim with it. I don't know why he didn't just go up and flush it.
But that was a big, big spot. He missed a wide open layup. And on the other end, the kid Mutz lost control of the ball on the drive, and somehow the ball went in through the went into the basket. One of the things that I would just remind all Maryland people out there, especially those of you who really are tired of the Turgeon era after 11 years, and as I've said many times before, I think he's a good coach. I'm not backing off that. You'll never get me to back off it because I know he's a good coach, and other coaches will tell you he's a good coach. Now, are there better coaches? Of course. Are there coaches that might be able to bring in a higher level player consistently? Maybe. I don't know. The one thing that I would say right now is that this team is, at this point, I don't know where it's going to come from. And if he turns this thing around, which, by the way, we've had this conversation many times in November and December about the team and about Turgeon, and then you get to late January or February and you're like, wow, how'd that happen? And that might happen again this year. I just don't know with whom it's going to happen. Last year, they had, you know, Wiggins and Morsell on the team. The year before that was his most talented team. You know, they had real high-level players. I don't know where it's going to come from offensively. And defensively, which has been his signature of his teams, especially when they really get it going and they turn it around, and even though you hate the scores of 65-62 and you don't like the style, and I understand that, you know, for all of us that remember, you know, Gary, you know, trying to get to 85 or 90 every night, certainly 80 every night, this is a grinded out coach, you know, possession by possession coach. You know, Maryland has consistently been near the bottom in average possessions per game. It's his preferred style. It's also, to be fair, the preferred style of most of the teams in the Big Ten. Not all of them, not Michigan State, not Purdue this year. But not Nebraska. There are a couple of other teams that have enjoyed getting out and running. I just don't know where it's going to come from offensively. And defensively, Wahab can be a liability, and Ayala can be a liability defensively. This will be one of those where if he figures it out and all of a sudden they end up with a good Big Ten season and they're in the NCAA tournament come March, this will be the first time that this is the most concerned in a few years that I've been. I've seen what he has seen in the last few years when he said, no, we're getting there. And I've seen it. And I'm like, no, they've got some players. They're not making shots. He's going to figure this thing out. And he has. This one, after watching them now for, what is it, 8 games, they're 5-3. I think the talent is, the cupboard's a little bit bare right now. I know some people would say, well, what about Daryl Morsell? I'd love to have Daryl Morsell on this team. I'd love to have the heart and soul on this team. But there would be a big difference defensively, big difference defensively. And I know he's playing much better offensively this year at Marquette. I know that. This is going to be a hard one for Mark to figure out, I think. Hopefully he'll remain positive. Hopefully the team will remain positive. There were high expectations coming in based on, you know, Maryland having, based on what everybody said, done really well in the transfer portal with Fats and with Wahab and with Martinez and with Xavier Green. And, you know, I'm sure I'm missing somebody else. But after 8 games of watching it, I don't see where it's coming from. It's going to have to be one of those teams that figures it out first defensively, which is the way he's always figured it out, which is all of a sudden they became a real tough defensive team. They were getting stops. They were holding teams to lower shooting percentages. And last night behind, you know, if you take they were 9 of 20 from behind the arc. That's phenomenal. They still only shot like 37, 38% from the floor. There was a stretch in the second half where Maryland got stop after stop after stop and lots of rebounds. But offensively, ooh. And Virginia Tech's half-court sets to get their shooters wide-open looks from behind the arc, pretty impressive. They were a difficult team to guard down the stretch, in part because of what they were doing offensively.
They get Northwestern Maryland, does in their first Big Ten game of the year, Sunday at noon. I'm going to tell you right now, they're going to be a very short favorite, Brendan. Very short. I watched Northwestern the other night a little bit against Wake Forest, and they're not terrible. I think some people thought Northwestern was going to be bad this year. I don't think they are. And I think right now, Maryland's not very good. All right, that's that. Wizards next, then we'll get back to our Washington football team. I also wanted to talk a little bit, because we've not had a chance to get to it this week. Just the absolute craziness of college football's coaching carousel. Brian Kelly said something yesterday that I don't think anybody would have ever thought a Notre Dame football coach would ever say. We'll get to that as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
Winding the shot clock down. KCP in the corner for three. That might just do it.
And he has owned the paint.
The Wizards hands Minnesota just its second loss in the last nine games.
Oh. How about the combination last night of Gafford and Montrezl Harrell? All right, they combined to go 18 of 22 from the floor. 18 of 22 from the floor. Gafford was 7 of 10. Harrell was 11 of 12. Montrezl Harrell last night scored 27 points in 21 minutes. They also combined for 15 rebounds and five blocked shots. I'm sorry, three blocked shots. The Wizards win 115-107. It wasn't easy last night. Not easy at all. The T-Wolves had a halftime lead. They had chances late, but Washington came through when it mattered, pulling away for a 115-107 win against a team in Minnesota that had been playing well coming in, had been playing very well coming in. They had won six of their last seven coming into the game. Washington gets a big win for them after, you know, the loss to the Spurs the other night, which was ugly. Big win for them. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I watched the whole game. I was watching Maryland. I was watching Maryland Virginia Tech, flipping in between commercials to catch it. Watched some of the guys in the wrap-up show last night. It's a good win for them. I'm happy for them. And now they get the Cavs on Friday night at home, before heading on the road for, I think it's three or four in a row. The Cavs, by the way, have been playing well. They beat the Heat. They beat the Mavs recently and had a close game and a chance against the Phoenix Suns, who we didn't mention yesterday, beat the Warriors the other night for their 17th consecutive win. Pretty impressive in the NBA when you can win 17 games in a row, which is what Phoenix has done. They're 18-3. In the West. Okay, so I wanted to just real quickly talk a little bit of college football because we haven't done that this week. Number one, as far as the playoff rankings go heading into Championship Saturday, I don't think it's that hard to figure out right now. Like, Georgia's in no matter what happens. Alabama, to me, now has to win to get in. They don't pass the eye test. It's weird to say that about Bama, but they don't. They should have lost to LSU. They could have lost to Arkansas, and they obviously were very much on the verge of losing to Auburn. They're a one-loss team. The thought for a month running has been, well, if Bama plays a close game in the SEC title game against Georgia, they'll get in. I don't believe that at all. I think Bama is out with a loss against Georgia, no matter how close it is, unless there's complete chaos. Georgia's in. We know that. They're the only one that's in. Now it's about figuring out the other three spots. Well, they're really easy if the favorites win this weekend. Michigan's a 10.5-point favorite over Iowa in the Big Ten title game. If they win that game, they are in. They were number two in the recent college football playoff rankings. Cincinnati is no longer a question mark for me at all. If they beat Houston in their conference championship game on Saturday afternoon, and they are a 10.5-point favorite. By the way, Michigan being a 10.5-point favorite, Brendan, and Cincinnati being a 10.5-point favorite on Saturday, those are high lines, and the public bettor believes the underdogs are the right sides in both of those games. So there may be a Cincinnati and Michigan on the smell test tomorrow. But Cincinnati, if they win, they're in. So Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati with wins. And then it's about determining the fourth spot. To me, it's really easy. If Oklahoma State beats Baylor, they're in. And there are your four teams. Oklahoma State at that point, I think, would be the four, and Cincinnati would be the three, and you'd have a Cincinnati-Michigan semifinal and a Georgia-Oklahoma State final. Be nice, by the way, just to have some new blood. You know, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, and Michigan making their first playoff appearances and one from outside the Power Five, I think would be exciting. It would make for a great New Year's Eve, you know, evening and night with the college football playoff games. Is it on New Year's Eve? I think it is on New Year's Eve this year. I believe it is. I might be wrong. It might be New Year's Day. Because New Year's Day is a Saturday. And so they're not playing NFL on Saturday. They'll be playing the NFL on Sunday. Will you look that up for me real quickly? Tell me when the semifinal games are and which bowl games they're in or which locations they're in. So that's that. Those are your playoff teams. If the favorites win this weekend, Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State is ahead of Notre Dame right now. So if you're thinking, no, Notre Dame gets in over Oklahoma State or Cincinnati, no, they don't. And by the way, if they get in, they won't be with their head coach, Brian Kelly, who is off to LSU. More on that coming up in a second. Now, chaos. What if you get chaos? What if Iowa wins? What if Houston beats Cincinnati? What if Baylor beats Oklahoma State? Then it gets nuts. You know, because then you only have Georgia, and now all these other teams, with the exception of Cincinnati, would be two-loss teams.
And now Ohio State's back in the picture. Baylor becomes a part of the picture as a champion, as a conference champion over Oklahoma State. Iowa would not be in the picture, and Houston would not be in the picture as winners. You know, now you'd start to consider, you know, Notre Dame would obviously be the second team in. If chaos happens, Notre Dame's in. So it's Georgia, Notre Dame, and then you're trying to figure out two spots. And maybe Bama's back into the conversation if chaos ensues. I'm not expecting chaos on Saturday, though. I'm expecting Michigan, Cincinnati definitely to win. And then, you know, I don't know if it's Oklahoma State. If it isn't, then Notre Dame ekes in and they play a semifinal game without their head coach, Brian Kelly. Will be exciting on Saturday. And that's where I wanted to go next. This is what Brian Kelly said yesterday in his LSU press conference. He said, I came down here because I wanted to be with the best. The resources here are outstanding. It starts with the alignment, excellence, and the standard of expectations. Listen, you're looked at in terms of championships here. I want that. I want to be under the bright lights. I want to be on the Broadway stage. That's what my passion is. So yeah, that's part of the draw. There's no doubt about that. Closed quote. He coached at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is off Broadway? Notre Dame's not under the bright lights? Notre Dame is not looked at in terms of championships? That's amazing to me. This was a shock to me. I heard some rumblings about Brian Kelly to USC from various people that I know that are very much involved in college football. I had no idea. And when I read the whole Lincoln Riley to USC, Brian Kelly to LSU, it blew me away. The Kelly to LSU, for anybody that says, oh yeah, I saw that coming. I mean, he had to get out of Notre Dame. What? But then I thought about it. It's true. There was a time, Brendan, you're not old enough to remember this, but you don't have to be much older than you to remember Notre Dame and a job opening being the biggest sports story there was. So you would never think about a Notre Dame coach leaving on his own to go somewhere else. You were at the pinnacle at Notre Dame. But it's not anymore, and it hasn't been for a while. And you know what is the pinnacle in all of college sports? SEC football, period, end of discussion. That's the pinnacle. That's the mountaintop. You've got to be in the SEC. And by the way, Lincoln Riley decided to leave the SEC because Oklahoma's going into the SEC to take a job in LA. I think that's a little bit different, to be honest with you. USC, LA, bright lights, a conference. Notre Dame's playing Wake Forest and North Carolina and ACC teams. Brian Kelly's going to LSU because the SEC in aggregate is better than Notre Dame and a lot better than Notre Dame. The LSU job specifically is a better job than Notre Dame's. Now, it is. It's amazing to hear him say, I want to be looked at in terms of championships. I want to be under the bright lights. I want to be on the Broadway stage. That's not where he was at Notre Dame, their own network. The brightest lights in sports over a long period of time? Well, I guess the answer now is no, it's not the brightest lights. It is a bit off Broadway. The SEC rules. The SEC is a money machine. LSU's had two national championships with two coaches who were essentially escorted out of the building shortly thereafter. LSU expects to win a national championship. Notre Dame's hoping to be a playoff team where they then can get absolutely demolished by an SEC team. I just thought the quote, though, was amazing. Amazing. So you still have, obviously, the Oklahoma opening, and it does look like the Notre Dame opening is going to be filled by their defensive coordinator, Marcus Freeman, who a lot of people
And I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday, just said, this guy is legit. He's 35 years old, so he's been Brian Kelly. He just finished his first year as Brian Kelly's defensive coordinator. Look, he may be coaching in a playoff game on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, Brendan.
Well, the committee made it sound like that is not going to happen.
Well, it won't have a chance. They won't have a chance to not let that happen if Oklahoma State, if we go through those scenarios and everybody wins or everybody loses and Notre Dame's left standing as an 11-1 team, they'll be in it with Marcus Freeman coaching if chaos ensues this weekend. It may only take, as we just talked about, it may only take Oklahoma State losing, and that may be it to get Notre Dame in. All right. Because Alabama, I don't think, is getting in as a two-loss team. I think that ship has sailed. All right, that's it on college football. How many more wins does Washington have in them? And how many will it take?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.